Hey, what's going on, guys? It's Jackson, and this is the NBA Action with Jackson podcast. Today, I'll be having on NMZ Hoops to talk Memphis Grizzlies, Klay Thompson, Jalen Green, and the Cam Reddish trade. Tired of hearing the same old takes from the same old people? Looking to add some humor, culture, and energy to your daily grind? Your search just might be over. At Rise Network, we're a global multimedia platform for the best and most diverse voices in sports, entertainment, and pop culture. Podcasts, streams, articles, reviews, you name it, we do it. Visit at Rise Network US on all social media platforms or visit www.risenetworkus.com for more info. So what are you waiting for? Come on and rise with us. All right. Thanks for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Jackson. What about yourself?
Real good. Excited to relax over the weekend, watch some more basketball, and just really enjoy it all. Been busy.
That's good. Yeah, there's some exciting games tonight. You know, after this, I'm looking forward to watching that Bulls-Warriors game. And then there's been some, you know, some surprising scores, to say the least, over the last few days as well.
Yeah, it's been a weird stretch for the league. I feel like people are acting as if the sky is falling for a lot of these teams. And then some of those teams are kind of in the play-in mix, like the Pelicans are getting back in to the swing of things. And then you have guys like Portland and the Clippers who are kind of faltering, but really interesting spot as the deadline comes up. Teams kind of have to choose their course and action plan. And then once the trade deadline comes and goes, we'll kind of have an idea of what teams are going for it and what teams are not. But today I wanted to hit on Klay Thompson, the Grizzlies, briefly on Jalen Green, and then the Cam Reddish trade. So through three games, I don't know how much you've watched. What are your impressions of Klay Thompson and on a more macro level, the Warriors since he returned?
Yeah, I think they're 1-2 in the two games he actually played in. And they're kind of hitting a rough stretch as a team. And I know some people were kind of concerned with, you know, how guys like Wiggins and Poole would look when he got back, just trying to fit all those guys in, get them all shots. I'm not really worried about that long term. For Klay himself, I mean, he's came out really aggressive. He's just trying to, you know, establish a rhythm. I think a lot of times people forget these guys are human. I forget the number, like 941 days, I want to say. If anyone that, you know, has played basketball knows, you sit out even a week, you get really rusty. So it's going to take some time for him to get back into the swing of things, his timing, his rhythm. But, I mean, even then we've seen insane flashes, like that crossover he put on Jared Allen and that dunk that really, you know, surprised me. But, yeah, I'm not really going to assess Klay until he has at least 15, 20, 25 games under his belt. But, you know, if he's able to get back to 80, 90% of himself with what this team already has, it's going to be really tough to beat this team. But, yeah, I mean, he looks – I'd say he's ahead of schedule in my opinion.
It's kind of funny how he's come back and he's just immediately firing away like nothing's changed. Like he never left. 25 shots per 36 minutes. I think at this point in time, it really doesn't matter necessarily whether he's making or missing shots. I think it's pretty much a given. He's eventually going to start hitting threes again. And you hope, given his size and his position, that he can kind of fit in nicely with their core. Something that's kind of stood out to me since he returned, I feel like he's trying to do a lot off the dribble, even more so than prior to the injury. And I think this is just him trying to gain his rhythm, get his confidence back, get a feel for what he can do on the court. You know, maybe people might become critical of that down the line, but I think at this stage, especially it being the regular season, kind of the dog days where you're just trying to get through it, get to the playoffs, and then we can see what they are in the conference finals, NBA finals, etc. But at this point in time, I think that's paramount for him, just getting back in game shape, up to game speed, just playing basketball every other day for the first time in 3 years.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think one thing that doesn't get mentioned also, you know, obviously he has a synergy with Steph, and he hasn't really gotten to play with Draymond since Draymond got back, but I mean, since Draymond got hurt. But he's never really played with a lot of these guys too. You know, the Warriors kind of underwent a transitional period, a lot of new guys there. So for them, it's their first time playing with Klay, and same thing vice versa. It's his first time, you know, seeing action with these guys. But that's going to take time. But I guess my most promising thing I've seen is there hasn't really been injury apprehension from Klay. He hasn't been scared to make moves, get to the lane, like you said, put the ball on the floor. And I think that bodes well for their future, because a lot of times with the injury, it's not just the physical regression at times. It can be the mental aspect and the confidence. So the fact that that hasn't seemed to be an issue thus far is really big for them going forward.
Awesome point. It can be really difficult, especially when you kind of come off the ACL, hurt your Achilles. And now, you know, he's got to be thinking in the back of my mind, I could get hurt again. But it's just, it's important for him to just control what he can control, and just try and keep his mind on the floor and just let the chips lay where they fall. And he doesn't look timid. I think he is kind of pressing the issue with some of the shots he's taking. But as I mentioned before, I think that's important for him getting back to being Klay Thompson. What are your thoughts on people kind of pushing back or discussing how Poole's coming off the bench now and Klay Thompson was essentially slotted right into the starting lineup? For me, I was fine with it. He's a franchise legend. They got to make it as easy as possible for him to find his footing. And just basketball philosophy wise, it is easier to integrate a player like Klay in the starting lineup and then push a ball dominant guard like Jordan Poole to the bench and then have him kind of run those bench units. The thinking is hopefully Wiseman eventually gets back and they can kind of be a pairing.
Yeah, you know, I pretty much agree with all of that. He's an icon in the Bay Area. He's been there, you know, he's one of the longest tenured players, of course. And I think, you know, it might take some time, but I think overall Jordan Poole's transition to the second unit makes more sense for this group. I think Jordan Poole, even though Klay just got back and Andrew Wiggins has definitely stepped up his game this year, I think Jordan Poole, he still has the potential to be the second best shot creator this team has. And even though he's hit a bit of a rough patch in terms of how he's been playing lately, I still think that, you know, come postseason time, they're going to need that production off the bench from somebody. And I think that's who it's going to be. A lot of guys on that second unit fill different roles, such as GP2. You know, he comes in, picks up the opposing team's best guard. You know, you got Kevon Looney, who's starting for now, but, you know, he's had to take, you know, some tougher matchups on the interior. We saw that last night. He struggled, but it's going to be, you know, there's going to be situations for Jordan Poole, especially with how teams are playing Steph Curry, where, you know, strong denials, trapping him off of all types of actions, that there's going to be another guy that's going to have to be able to put the ball on the floor. And when those second units come in, keep the Warriors afloat in those non-Steph minutes. So he does have an important role going forward, even though his role is changing. So I definitely think the Warriors got to keep him engaged, get him his touches, his shots, because he is going to be a big part of their championship push.
I like the point you made of how he looks good. He doesn't seem timid or have any injury apprehension. Just for putting a number out there, how many games do you think you would need to see, say, if Klay struggles or say if Klay looks amazing to where you would be thinking this is worrisome or, yep, Klay Thompson's fully back, all NBA player, he's a star still?
Honestly, it probably wouldn't come till next season for me. And I know that that's not the, you know, what most Warriors fans would want to hear in the midst of a championship push. But from an individual standpoint, I do think that these things take time. And I think he's missed so much time that, you know, I don't think it's realistic to expect him to be back to where he was in 30, 40 games. But I do think that if the question was, you know, altered a little bit to say, when could he be a productive player that could help them big time in the postseason, I think we could expect that in 20 to 30 games, as long as, you know, there's no, you know, further injury or re-injury, I should say. And then they keep managing his minutes, sit him out of back-to-backs, just take care of him the way they have been, because he's not playing tonight. I think the Warriors, they've always been a franchise that's been on top of these type of things. So I have no doubt that they will do that. And as long as Klay's body responds well to the increase in workload that's, you know, expected to come over the next few weeks, he should be able to be a productive player in short time.
That's a great answer, and it's not what everyone wants to hear. But we really won't know for sure about Klay for probably a year to a year and a half down the line. But I definitely think that he can contribute throughout the season and be a big-time player in the playoffs. However, that'll be kind of the first test, and we'll see how he responds. The playoffs are interesting because no back-to-backs. Every game is going to have a rest day between it. When you travel, most of the time there's going to be a travel day in there too. So that'll be a a pretty big indicator on what he will be. And then obviously next season, like you said, he's only really played with Steph, Looney, Iguodala. He hasn't played very much with Poole, with Wiggins, with GP2. And it'll take time. And I think that it's a good problem to have, because just having Clay back in the team gives him so many more options, especially with a coach like Kerr. He likes to play defensive slanted lineups, defensive oriented lineups, where he'll play Looney and Draymond together, or he'll play three non-shooters or three fake shooters with Steph or whomever it may be. And just having another all-time level shooter on the floor is going to, I think, just obviously, it's impossible not to sound cliche, but it's going to give their offense another layer. Connected to the Warriors, obviously, potential playoff matchup is the Memphis Grizzlies. And to the surprise of me, especially after the Valanciunas and even the Patrick Beverley trade, I kind of thought they were viewing this season as more transitional, like, hey, we'll make the play-in, or will be the 7 or 8 seed and it'll be awesome. That was kind of my expectation coming into the year. I had them below the Pelicans, below the Timberwolves, and I look like a complete idiot right now because they're 30-14, 6th in offense, 9th in defense, 6th overall, and riding an 11 game win streak. And that's not with a perfect case of health either. Morant had the injury. He had COVID. They've had their share of health and safety protocols, and they're just one of the ultimate vibes teams in the league right now, and it feels like nothing can kind of knock them off their pedestal to where they're playing. But what is your read on them? They're obviously one of the more exciting teams in the league to watch, with Morant, Triple J, and then Desmond Bain kind of emerging, and that's with a guy like Dylan Brooks who's just balls to the wall, full throttle at all times on the court.
Yeah, Memphis is one of my favorite teams to actually watch right now. Before the season, I felt like they were going to take the next step forward, even though they lost Jonas Valanciunas, which is a great point, because that's the reason a lot of people had them taking the step back. I thought they were going to be top six, so I thought they were going to graduate from that play-in spot area and just firmly cement themselves as a playoff team. A big reason why is the progression of the young talent, like I mentioned, but also Coach Jenkins, who I think hasn't gotten enough love from the NBA community yet. I think his name is starting to catch some buzz, and he should get some Coach of the Year recognition, in my opinion, especially if they keep climbing the standings, because I think they're third in the West now, and they're not even too far off of number 2-1, which maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago we thought it was going to only be Phoenix and Golden State running for those spots. So that's crazy in itself. One thing I got to shout out for Memphis, and you bring up their vibes, that is a team that's connected. They look like they're having a lot of fun. They just are on a roll right now. Ja Morant, like, once a game does something that I really have never seen before. Desmond Bane, I know he's a second year guy, but, you know, 30th overall, finding a guy like that in the draft, which they've been money on, by the way. You know, I know Jaren Jackson and Ja Morant were top 5 picks, but some of the other guys they've gotten in the later parts of the draft have been really big contributors. And those contributors have stepped up when other guys have missed time. Like, during this 11 game winning streak, I think only 3 of their rotation guys have actually played all 11 games. Like, Jaws missed a game, Desmond's missed a game, Steven Adams has missed extended time, and different guys have just stepped up when their name's called. I mean, I had Jaren Jackson on my ticket last night getting 6 rebounds, and I think Conchar stepped up and got 17 rebounds and added 15 points. So guys you just don't, you know, you don't think about coming in and making contributions. Tyus Jones is a really steady backup point guard, and when I watch them play Tyus and Ja, it actually allows Ja to get off the ball a little bit and kind of relieves him of that pressure, because defenses are starting to key in on him like he is a superstar, which he's, you know, he's approaching that territory at this point. We got to give him his credit. Definitely making a run for, you know, getting his name in that MVP ladder, MVP conversation, starting to see some buzz on that. So, I mean, they're clicking, man. There's just not much else to say.
You mentioned Conchar last night. They have guys like Brandon Clark, D'Anthony Melton, pretty much top to bottom. Tyus Jones is probably one of the best backup point guards in the league. If you told me he had to be my starting point guard for a full season, I'd say there's worse things in life than for that to happen. But interesting thought I was thinking through when I was doing my podcast preparation, just looking through their roster, kind of thinking about scenarios and seeing how they handled Valanciunas and trading Patrick Beverley earlier this offseason. But Kyle Anderson, I think he might be a sneaky deadline sell this year. Zaire Williams is playing a bit more than I expected, especially recently. Obviously, it's tough to expect a lot out of a rookie, especially one who's picked 10th. You know, obviously, those late lotto guys can take a few years to kind of find their groove. But over the past 3 or 4 weeks, he's starting to play more, almost 19 minutes a game on the year. And everybody says with these teams like Memphis, Atlanta, where if you have 10 or 11 guys you think can play, some might recommend a consolidation trade, just trade two rotation guys, get another rotation player, but he has a contract that's a year longer, or trade a contract that you want to get off, get a contract that you're comfortable taking in with an extra year, picking up a pick in the process, just little things like that. I think the Memphis front office is pretty innovative with moves like that. People always point to them being like team draft Twitter, and they seem like a very organized, forward-thinking team. So I don't really have a big grand point on that, but I'm just looking through what they are, what they can be. And it's tricky when you're playing this well. You don't want to break anything apart. For example, the Warriors very rarely do anything huge in season with personnel. I don't know how the Grizzlies will feel. 2 seasons ago, they did the Justice Winslow, Jay Crowder, Andre Iguodala trade, and that had mixed results. So now that they're a competitive team, it's well beyond the point of we should be playing a home playoff series. It's let's see if we can get to 2. Let's see if we can get the top seed. And they're a group that I don't think they're going to be complacent with being the 5th seed and playing 7 games in the first round. I think they want to win a playoff series and get on a little bit of a run.
Yeah, those are all really good points. I wouldn't be shocked if they decided to sell high on an asset or one of their guys that they have right now. And maybe, like you said, consolidate that and bring back a bigger name, although I don't see who that would be right now for them. Definitely have – they're going to have some expectations this year in the postseason as long as they're in that top 3 range. Like, that just comes with it. But, yeah, I think maintaining flexibility going forward, I think that, you know, if I'm – kind of foreshadowing what I want to see Memphis add in the near future is maybe like a two-way wing, maybe a shot creator in that position that they can play there. I know there's, you know, a plethora of names that are not available right now, like a Jaylen Brown, for example, but if he were to become available, like, that's something I would bite on if I'm Memphis. But yeah, I expect them to kind of, like you said, stand pat at the deadline, maybe not make anything too big of a move, like maybe something on the margins. But like you said, with Golden State and teams that, you know, tend to stand pat, it's like, if it's not broke, why fix it? And I think, like I said at the very beginning, and you touched on as well, like the vibes of this team and kind of just the way it is, way it's going right now in Memphis, like, you just don't mess with that, in my opinion. I think you let it play out, see what you have. Because as good as Memphis has played, I don't think anybody anticipates them like winning the NBA championship this year. And it's not a disappointing season for them if they get to the second round or even the conference finals. Like, that's a huge step forward in this group's development. So yeah, I mean, they're in a great position right now, very reminiscent to me of last year's Atlanta Hawks group.
That's a great parallel. Something that's been on my mind, I know the overall box score numbers are pretty similar for Jaren Jackson, but to me it just feels different, where I think he can be used interchangeably at the 4 or the 5. Feel like he's done well this season on his drives, can do a little bit of dribble handoff, and then obviously he's one of the best shooting bigs in the league. I know that he's been a bit streaky at various points this season, but his contract is not a max contract, it's a bit below that. And I think if you're Memphis right now, you're looking at that and being ecstatic, just having a guy who is probably a franchise cornerstone, a guy you can pair next to Ja Morant, really good on-court fit, of course, being a stretch big with some off the dribble chops. He's pretty athletic, and I don't want to speak out of bounds because I haven't watched them night in and night out, but I feel like this has been Jaren Jackson's best defensive season. Last year when he came back from the meniscus, I thought it was a bit shaky. But in his first 2 seasons, those flashes that he had, he was probably the best defensive prospect in his draft. Just for him to kind of catapult his health and his performance and put it all together and just he's having a really good season. I don't want to get crazy. I don't want to say he should be an all-star. And I've seen that on Twitter. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I do think that he has a really compelling all defense case, especially with the Grizzlies suddenly being in the top 10 in defense. I believe earlier in the season, maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago, I think they were 30th, dead last in the league. So just their ascension on that end has been really cool to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Jaren Jackson is a very, very unique player. And he's so young that while we've seen a lot of flashes that suggest he might be like an all-star or, you know, potentially something more down the line, there's also just like the understanding that there's a lot more for him to grow upon and get better at. And when I say unique, like, I just don't know how many players I've seen at his size that have such like a low release point, and he's able to kind of like move off the ball, like kind of like a guard in various actions. So it makes him very useful as a screener and then kind of like a relocation guy. And then defensively, I think you touched on it. He's like, as of late, he's just been a monster as a shot blocker, especially now that they're playing him at the five more with some injuries. I think early on, one of the biggest questions with Jaren Jackson, even though he was, you know, the premier defensive prospect, at least, you know, in the front court in that draft, he was kind of prone to committing a lot of fouls. It was easy to get him off his feet. But I think, you know, like with most players, as time has gone and as he's gained more experience, he's starting to get better at that. So, you know, if he keeps defending at this level and he's able to stay on the floor and stay out of foul trouble and his offense, you know, keeps progressing the way it is, I agree. His on-court fit with Ja, the synergy they have is just going to continue to grow. And it's going to be, you know, kind of the main staple of what makes this team good, because fitting both of them within the framework of an offense is not hard. And then he, in a lot of ways, covers up for whatever defensive limitations, you know, Ja or whoever else on the roster has. And I think when a lot of times we see teams draft, you know, two guys in the top five, unfortunately, they don't fit as seamlessly as these two have. So that's like really big for Memphis's future going forward.
Excellent point. I think a lot of teams, when they're doing a rebuild, they just assemble the talent. But luckily for Memphis, those two are such a great pairing. So as of January 14th, I'm going to put you on the spot. What is your prediction for the Grizzlies? For me, I'll be bland. I think they win a playoff series and play a semi-competitive second round series against one of the heavyweights in the West, obviously, Golden State, Phoenix, Utah.
All right. I like this question. So it depends on how this bracket plays out. But I'll say this. I think if they play the Golden State Warriors, they're going to be the only team in the Western Conference that takes Golden State past game five. I think the Warriors will beat every team in five or less, but the Memphis Grizzlies. So if the Memphis
in
Grizzlies,
the West.
In the West. If the Grizzlies play the Warriors, I think they'll take them to a game six. And if they avoid the Warriors in the first two rounds, I think they can make it to the Western Conference Finals. I think that's their ceiling for me.
That's a great prediction. I like how you even put the caveat that they're the only team in the West that you have advancing to a game six against the Warriors. Moving forward, just want to make sure I get this right. The Cam Reddish trade was Reddish, Solomon Hill, 2025 second, I believe, from Brooklyn for a protected Charlotte first, Kevin Knox, and then the Knicks waived Ryan Archie Diakno. When I saw this notification on my phone, my first instinct was, oh my gosh, the Knicks robbed the Hawks, because while I haven't always been high on Reddish, I think he's been intriguing through two plus seasons in the NBA. He was picked 10th. I think that's more or less to how he's performed. It's pretty rare for teams to get off of young prospects that they're actually playing and involved in their rotation. So this is not a very common trade in the NBA, unless you're trading for an all-star caliber player. And then even then teams will say, oh, player X is untouchable, even though they're probably being overvalued within their own organization. But after thinking about it a little bit, it does make sense that the Hawks wanted to shrink the rotation and get a guy who they can reset the extension timer. Reddish is probably going to get a big, big payday in one plus off seasons. I believe it's 2023 that he's a free agent, and restricted free agency, that can be a very interesting time, especially if you get a balloon offer sheet from another team. Then you have to play the game of, do we match? Do we let them walk? And I've given it some thought. I'm giving the Hawks a little bit of a pass. However, I do think that they did botch an opportunity to get a 3-and-D wing who actually has ball skills. I know people have complained about Reddish taking a ton of mid-range jumpers. Roughly 30% of his shots are from the mid-range area. And to me, I don't think the mid-range is a bad shot in and of itself. I mean, obviously, you prefer a layup, free throws, or three-point attempt, but just over the course of the game, you're going to need to take those looks. I think sometimes he's a little bit out of control. Sometimes his game feels predetermined when he makes a decision, but just his blow up games, sometimes he's able to string five or six just incredible games together. He had a pretty productive playoffs off injury, and he's just a guy that I think is worth keeping an eye on, especially on a team like New York. Thibodeau is going to expect him to guard. I think that he fits well with both Quickley and Burks and Randall. Those are the three sources of dribble penetration. Obviously, Rose is hurt, but really unique trade, really unique kind of build up to it, where it was very clear entering the season the Hawks wanted to get off him. So what are your thoughts on the trade?
Yeah, there's three angles to look at it from. The Atlanta Hawks perspective, you know, the Knicks perspective, and then Cam Reddish himself. I'll start with the Hawks. I don't think the Hawks, their intention was ever to pay Cam Reddish. Just looking at his age and just some of the flashes he's shown, I think, like you said, there was going to be a team that was going to definitely take a flyer on him and throw him a number that, you know, Atlanta was probably not comfortable matching. And Atlanta, kind of foreseeing that, decided, hey, we need to get something out of him now, as opposed to letting him walk by not matching in the offseason. Just because of, you know, I mean, I saw something recently that said, you know, Cam Reddish is, it was pretty alarming how ineffective he's been defensively this year, but that's been the Hawks as a whole. Honestly, I think they're,
you know, yeah, I believe the B-ball index metrics aren't very favorable for Cam Reddish. Like, yeah, he's towards the bottom of the league.
Yeah. And I don't put that all on him, just because the Hawks have been a disaster on that end as a team. But even offensively, like you've said, he's had blow up games, but you know, consistency has always kind of been an issue with Cam Reddish. Also health. He just hasn't been healthy. And that's kind of hurt him. And I was shocked to see that they didn't, you know, because I know there was a good portion of the season where TLC was starting at the two guard spot. I don't even know if that's still continued, but I expected,
Mets fans, you know, favorite TLC.
Yeah. I expected, you know, Cam to get a shot with the starting group, but they kept him in that same role. So I guess they didn't view him like the way, you know, others view him, maybe around the league or even on NBA Twitter. But I understand that from the Hawks perspective, even though that I feel like the return could have been better, especially if they had packaged him with something else on the team. So consolidated him with another asset and got back maybe an impact player right away. But I get it from their perspective. For the Knicks, I've never been a fan of the Knicks offensively. I think Tibbs, he runs a lot of outdated stuff, kind of archaic to me. And then there's a lot of people on that team, won't say any names, that just play a brand of basketball that I'm just not a fan of. So I don't really know from Cam Reddish's perspective if this is the team that's going to help him flourish. So like the third thing I said, it was the third thing to look at, is Cam Reddish himself. Is this really ideal for him? I don't know. I feel like I much rather would have seen him on a rebuilding team, one of the teams at the bottom of the standings where there's much less, you know, expectations, where he's going to get his shots, opportunities. Because a lot of times it's just creation reps. Can Cam Reddish get the ball in his hands to do this or that, right? And I think since high school, you know, he went to Duke, played with two other elite prospects. That was kind of limited. And he was a bit underwhelming. He slid based on where he was projected to go in the preseason. I think he was like a top three, top four.
Yeah, wasn't he the third? Or was he two, yeah, RCIs?
Exactly. He was right up there. And then he ended up sliding, you know, towards the later end of the lottery. So I don't know if I love him to New York. I feel like somewhere else might have been better. But, you know, I think at least he has a change of scenery and a fresh start out of Atlanta, because I think his situation in Atlanta was pretty much capped at this point.
Yeah, it was odd how even when DeAndre Hunter is dealing with his injury woes, that I don't think McMillan really wanted to make Reddish a 35-minute-per-game player or anything like that. I feel like the other members of their core were more prioritized. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend that Reddish has always been this incredible player. In fact, I don't think that he's the superstar that some think he can be on NBA Twitter. However, I actually like the landing spot. I think that that pairing on the wing with Barrett will be really good. Obviously, the concern is that New York's offense has kind of hit a halt this year. It's been picking up a little bit as of late, but earlier in the season, they were one of those teams where it was when it rains, it pours, and just they couldn't hit the backside of a barn. They were playing well below expectations after a good start. So I think this is a trade that we could look back on at the end of the season as a turning point for the Knicks, similar to how we looked at the Derrick Rose trade last season. Now, Cam Reddish is currently injured with the sprained ankle. Thibodeau was vague on how long he's going to be out. Is it going to be a few games, or is this something that's going to be week to week? That's really difficult to kind of assess. But I like the trade overall, and I understand it from both sides. I think that long-term, it's definitely more likely that the Hawks regret doing this trade, especially given the protections on the pick from Charlotte. Doesn't look like it's going to be anything too damaging for New York to give up. But I also understand that with Trae Young's max kicking in next year and some of the other guys they plan on paying or need to pay, that they needed to make a move, especially given how poorly they've started relative to preseason expectations.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Atlanta is in a tough spot. I think also last year's conference finals run in a way kind of accelerated their rebuild. They're no longer picking at the front of the draft, obviously. And I think the expectations skyrocketed for them. And with that, I think the expected price tag for a lot of these players went up too. And that's why I think I think Kevin Herter's extension came sooner. John Collins got paid, things like that. So like you said, Trey's money's set to kick in. So there was going to be an odd man out ultimately. And they still have a lot of young talent, even though they gave up Reddish. But I think it was the way that they were utilizing these guys, it was kind of apparent that Cam Reddish was kind of going to be the guy that was going to be moved. I just wasn't sure what kind of deal they were going to make that into. And the fact that they kind of just shipped him out, you know, basically solo, because I think Solomon Hill, I don't know if he'll really latch on in New York, but I thought they could have got a lot more. But with what they got, I don't think you can complain too much going forward. I don't think it sets back Atlanta in the future. But you're right, there is the potential that Cam Reddish flourishes, kind of realizes his full potential, and then the Hawks are kind of looking back at it like, maybe we should have given the kid more time.
Yeah, my guess would be that Reddish eventually gets it together and plays well, and people are probably going to give the Hawks a hard time over the trade, but I think that in time it'll be like, oh, it was kind of a win-win deal. Both teams kind of got what they wanted out of it. Now, the Hawks start could be a podcast in of itself, but what is your kind of view of them moving forward for the rest of the season? Coming into the year, I had mixed feelings about them, especially when we're comparing them to Miami, Philadelphia, etc. But I kind of wavered a bit and I said, okay, they got a lot of ball handling. They got some guys that can be great shot makers, excuse me. They got two rim rollers. John Collins is so malleable and so easy to fit in with pretty much anyone on the wing, and he can play with another big in Capella. Obviously the chemistry those two have with Trae Young. Although I will say, I think Capella probably is a better pick and roll partner with Trae than John Collins, just in my estimation. I don't know why I've gotten that sense ever since Capella got healthy for the Hawks last year, but point being, I thought that they were going to be pretty good and they're in the play-in mix, and coming off a conference finals appearance, that is a disaster, that is failure. And I think they'll get back into the play-in, but I'm not going to be bold and say they'll be a playoff team or say they'll win a playoff series. We can't say anything like that right now. So what's your read on them?
Yeah, I think you touched on it. It's disappointing. You know, I'll be honest, before the season, I expected them to probably be like a top four seed. I thought they were going to be competing for the very top spots in the East. I saw, you know, Nate McMillan, what he did with that group in the second half last season, I thought it was going to carry over. Their continuity was there. A lot of the same pieces were back. There wasn't much change. I just didn't see a reason why Atlanta wouldn't take that next step forward, especially with the young talent they have now. Kind of like what I expected for the Grizzlies. Like a lot of the same young guys are back. They should be getting better. They're coming off a conference finals run. you know, they should be inspired to try to make that leap. But for whatever reason, that just hasn't happened. I think the biggest reason why is they've taken a huge step back defensively. And you can attribute that to a number of things, health being one of them, especially for Clint Capella. He just hasn't looked like the same player from a season ago. I think he's dealing with an ankle right now, and I think his heel has been bothering him, which is what he was ultimately dealing with in Houston before he left. So I don't know if that's going to be like a long-term thing to watch out for, but if that heel slash Achilles area keeps flaring up, I'd be very concerned if I'm the Hawks. And then I guess, you know, is there locker room noise or thing that's going on behind the scenes? Because I see these reports about John Collins where I look at his production, doesn't look like anything's too far off. I know, you know, he's still shooting the ball very well. He's very efficient. And when you watch them on the court, it doesn't feel like him and Trey have any, you know, they're lacking anything in terms of just their synergy. But, you know, there are definitely people that watch that team more than I do. So if somebody knew that, I would definitely be interested in hearing about that. But it's hard to pinpoint exactly why this team is where they're at. And like you said, I can't say that they're going to get past the first round or even make it to the first round. Like, they have to make the play-in and then they have to win one or two playing games. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're the biggest disappointment in the league this season, honestly, just because I just don't know why a team with basically all their pieces back has taken this big of a step back after what we saw last season.
Yeah, some big time 15-16 Rockets vibes going on with them. Anyways, one last thing before I let you go. I always see on Twitter, you have great analysis of the Rockets night in and night out, just analyzing the team. I wanted to get your perspective on Jalen Green to this point, because he is such a reactionary hot button player on Twitter. It's where some fans wanted Mobley and they hate him. Others are just going to go with the wave and say, we got Jalen Green. Let's get behind him. He's our guy. And I'm a fan of his game. I think he'll be an all-NBA player. Obviously, he's not the most efficient to this point. And the jump shooting has taken a step back from last year. Although, I believe it's like 37% since he came back from the hammy, right? I might be wrong. Anyways, point being, he's so hot and cold on Twitter, to where some love him, some hate him. Some say it's a great pick. Some say Mobley would have been the future. And obviously, Evan Mobley is probably the rookie of the year to this point. So that kind of compounds it. But what are your thoughts on Jalen Green? And then kind of offhand, are you pleased or upset with the pick?
Yeah, so I'll just, you know, address the first part right away. I initially wanted Evan Mobley. I still stand on that. But, you know, now that he's our guy, I'm definitely going to be rooting for him. I just don't think it makes much sense to, you know, blame the kid for getting drafted second overall. Like, it wasn't his decision to end up in Houston. The team took him. So that's where I stand on that. As for his play, I mean, I think he's 19 years old, and I think a lot of people have to understand that both things can be true, that yes, he hasn't been an effective basketball player yet, as most 19-year-olds aren't, and that he's not a finished product. Like, this isn't who he's going to be later down the line. It takes time to get used to a lot of these things. And I know there was a lot of people that were expecting him to be more pro-ready than the other prospects because of the, you know, his stint in the G League Ignite. But, you know, in Houston, a lot of the times we got to be real with, you know, what the situation he's in. Like, he didn't go to a Toronto Raptors or a Cleveland Cavaliers where they field more overall NBA talent to kind of mask his deficiencies, so they kind of stand out on this team. But just from an individual standpoint, you know, he has been a pretty terrible defensive player. A lot of that has to do with his frame. I think he's definitely going to have to add weight as he goes, because he does have the physical tools to at least be a neutral on that end at some point, in my opinion. Like, we see some of the stuff he can do offensively and just his movements, but and just understanding of rotation, scheme, things like that. Most 19-year-olds don't have that right away either. But yeah, and offensively speaking, like I said about the frame, that carries over offensively. Like, it's been a mixed bag when he goes to the basket this year. At times, it's been very difficult for him to generate any free throw attempts. And then it becomes, you know, very reliant on his jump shooting. And then, you know, jump shooting, as we know, can be inconsistent for most players, especially a guy that just got to the league. But I know Coach Lucas is working on his mechanics with him. And, you know, when he first came back from that hamstring injury, he definitely had a stretch there where he shot the ball really well. The kid doesn't lack for confidence, so that's what I really like. You just kind of hear it in his voice and see it in his play. So I'm still optimistic about him going forward. But I think, you know, if you're going to just sit there and compare him to Evan Mobley for the next 5 to 10 years, that's where you're maybe going to be a bit underwhelmed. But if you just kind of look at it from Jalen Green himself standpoint and see what he can be, I think he's definitely got, you know, another progression or two this year after the All-Star break, kind of like Ant last year, and then even more going forward.
Yeah, I brought this up on Twitter a couple days ago, but he compares pretty favorably to how Beal, LaVine, Ant started their careers. And it's going to take time, obviously, with the scorer. You brought up the point that to start the season, he wasn't really getting to the line, being over-reliant on the jumper. The free throw attempts are starting to trickle up a bit, and I think he'll kind of reemerge isn't the right word, but I think he'll have a pretty good second half of the season and then carry that over to next year. Anyways, let the people know where they can find you and just where they can see your work, check you out, all that.
Yeah, my Twitter handle is NMZ Hoops. And on my Twitter, you can see on my links, I have my blog on there, and I write on there periodically. Haven't released anything as of late, but I'm really active on there. Should be releasing something soon. And those are the best places to find me. And I'm always up to talk ball with anybody. Watch a lot of NBA basketball and, you know, have fun doing so.
Awesome. Great analysis. I could not have said that Rockets tidbits better myself, and you had a great gauge on the Grizzlies too. Thank you so much for coming on, and it's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to NMZ for coming on the show. Great analysis top to bottom. Make sure you guys check out his links in the description. As for me, I got to get out of here. Busy weekend coming up. Lots of basketball to watch, and I'm getting married. So that's very exciting. Anyways, I'll be back again as soon as possible. Apologies on the irregular schedule with the podcast, but I think that I've hit a spot where I'm getting out content that I like, discussions and talks that I really enjoy. And that's the biggest thing. And if I have to take an extra day to do that, I'm going to do that. As always, ratings, reviews, shares, all that, always appreciated. It's how the podcast grows, even if it's constructive or negative feedback. Why not? I can handle it. But thank you so much for checking out the show. I'll talk to you guys real soon. Peace.